Hello and welcome to the Walk Podcast. My name's Lena Rowland, Head of Content for Walk Strategy. And today we're talking about attention, which, as you know, is a topic that we've covered a lot on Walk. Areas like how to measure attention and how to secure quality attention. And today we're talking specifically about how marketers can activate attention in a meaningful way, in a way that leads to better outcomes such as sales. So to talk about this, I'm delighted to be joined by Samuel Breeley and Max Stricker, authors of Can I Have Your Attention, Please?, a new paper we recently published on Walk. Samuel Breeley is a chartered marketer and consultant, and Max Stricker is client director at Trinity Marketing. Sam, welcome back to the podcast. Max, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back. I think it's been 2 years since I was on here, so the time has flown by. For those of you who don't know me, I am a marketing consultant and I work primarily with small businesses being anything up to 250 employees. So not really that small. And I'll pass you over to Max now.
Hey there, I'm Max. It's my first time on the podcast, so I'm not quite as seasoned as Sam. But by the way, in case you're wondering where my accent is from, I'm a born and bred Austrian, but I've been living in the UK for, I think it's about 20 years. I've lost track there. I'm a client director at Trinity Marketing. And what we do is we help some of the biggest companies in the world, such as Mars or Diageo, for example, transform their marketing through behavior change, strategy and capability building.
Great stuff. So you're both coming from different perspectives with, I suppose, the kind of like global brand perspective and then the more SME perspective. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a bit, but let's get stuck in. I guess a good place to start is why the two of you wanted to co-author this paper.
Me and Max have worked together in the past and we both have similar views on a lot of these things, but as you've just said, we come from very different ends of the marketing spectrum. So Max is that big brand marketing world guy, lives in London. I don't. I live outside of the M25. I've always worked in SMEs. I've always worked with SME clients. And what I like to do is to try and find that common ground with people, because I feel like so much marketing discourse comes from the parapets of big brands and big advertising agencies. And that makes it very difficult to apply to smaller businesses, even though the majority of businesses in the world are small businesses. So that's a bit of a bugbear of mine. So I thought, well, hey, let's see if we can do something together and find some common ground and write something that is useful for all marketers, all business people, all advertisers.
Yeah, so just to build on what Sam has said, I mean, attention is a really big topic at the moment. Why? Well, quite simply because we as consumers, not just as marketers, as business owners, we really live in a world of information overload. And attention, therefore, I would argue, is rightly so, a very big topic. And whilst attention is a big topic and marketers seem to understand that it's important, Sam and I really found that there's a lack of clarity, on A, what to do with this attention, and B, how to get attention. And this is what we've really set out to achieve with this article. We wanted to provide a so what to attention, to provide guidance on what marketers should be doing when thinking about the topic of attention. And that's why we developed the associative attention concept. And just to really clarify that, our aim is here not to come up with a new buzzword. There's plenty out there, I would argue, in the world of marketing, but with a concept that genuinely helps marketers act on attention so they achieve better executions.
So what do we mean by, what exactly is associative attention?
So in a nutshell, really, it's a concept that helps you deliver better execution, meaning in that case, better advertising, better point of sale material and better packaging. It applies to all of these areas, really. And associative attention is built on the fact that attention itself is not the end goal, but it is an important step towards sales. And to drive sales, attention needs to build what we call mental associations. And these are basically associations that establish your brand or product, service, whatever you have, firmly in the minds of your potential customers. And why is that important? Because customers buy the brands that are mentally available, the ones they are familiar with, the ones that come to mind in a buying situation. Quite simply, if you don't come to mind, if people don't know you or they don't recognize you or they don't know what your product or service is for, what are your chances of being bought? I would argue they're very, very low at best.
And Max, just to say that that idea of mental availability, that's the kind of idea that was advanced by the folks at the Ehrenberg Bass Institute. That's right, isn't it? The idea of building those associations so that your brand comes to mind at those buying points of sale.
Yes, absolutely. It's the cornerstones of associative attention, I would say, because what associative attention really aims to do is it brings together what we call the what and the how of attention. The what meaning what we need to build attention for, the associations we need to build in the minds of our consumers. And these are when to think of our brand and how to recognize it. The technical terms for these are category entry points, CEPs, and distinctive brand assets. Both, as you've already started to point out, have been coined by the Ehrenberg Bass Institute in Australia. So that's the what. And the how, on the other hand, is how we actually get the attention for our brand so we can build these associations that I've just mentioned. And this, of course, includes the media that we use and the creative that we develop. And just to make that really clear, and Sam and I, when we talk about creative, we sort of like to simplify it, we use it as a catch-all phrase to include advertising, but also point of sale material and packaging. And it's really that all these parts on their own, they are important. But where the true magic happens is when all these parts are joined together. And this is when brands can really see transformational executions, when they drive the what and the how, when they understand basically and focus on associative attention.
Yeah, so this sounds logical, definitely, but what is holding brand owners back to get to the what and the why? So in other words, how do they get associative attention right?
Yeah, it's a great question, Lena, and I would argue that probably the simple answer there is because we often look at these parts, the what and the how, in isolation. Let me maybe explain this with an example from my own experience. At Trinity Marketing, when we work with our clients, we tend to work with different functions and departments within a client. And what we often find is that there are these functional silos. For example, you may have a specialist that focuses on the creative side of things, or another specialist focusing on media, or one on brand, and so on and so forth. And what this can really do is create silos. Silos where people might do great work in isolation, but work that doesn't necessarily ladder up to a bigger picture. So part of our role for our clients is to break the silos and to connect the dots, which is exactly what the associative attention concept is about. It's about connecting these dots. And I think, Sam, you've seen the very same things basically in smaller organizations, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. Regardless of the size of the business, I think it's just a nature of how business is done. You end up with functional silos, you end up with specialisms. And even in the smallest SMEs, you might have a marketing manager and then someone else who is the digital expert. And whilst they may work together to some capacity, it's pretty common to see them working separately. And I see that challenge a lot with smaller businesses in terms of how do they get attention? Well, they usually think it's a case of just asking a cool creative agency that's local to them to do some work. But what they don't usually have is that market orientation piece nailed. They don't understand who their customers are. They don't understand why people buy from the broader category. So that is a lot of the work I've done for my clients, which is helping them understand wider buying behavior within the category, so category entry points, and then also understanding clearly why their customers buy as well. Because that really is the basis of an effective brief that you can then send out to suppliers. If you're a small business, you won't be able to necessarily in-house it. So you need a brief that has that information in it so you can send it out to the creative, and then they can kind of be set free within context, as opposed to kind of be given free rein and then not really know what they're supposed to do, which I think is why we see so much creative work that comes out that looks good on paper and wins awards, but doesn't do what it's supposed to do in terms of, you know, moving the dial on sales or profitability or any other metric that's important to a business's objective. And again, that applies to both small and large organizations.
As you said, Sam, you need to do both. You can't just have an ad that's creative, but actually doesn't sell. We need to get both right, the media and the creative in this example. Yeah. And think about it this way. If you just develop the best creative, the best ad, but no one sees it because your media plan is poor, what will they do to your sales? Well, probably not much, no? Or you have really great media plan that reaches the right audience, and you also have great ad that really grabs attention. But whilst people notice it, they don't recognize what the brand is or what the brand does, why it's relevant for them. So basically, the ad is not building mental associations. And again, the question is, what will that do to your sales? Not much. And what I've just mentioned here, these are not just theoretical thought experiments. These situations really occur. And Sam and I also talk about this in the article, where we bring in the example of the famous Budweiser puppy ad from the Super Bowl a few years ago. The ad received a lot of attention, was highly shared, but did nothing to the sales. And it's not me and Sam saying this. This really comes from the VP for marketing, who said, everybody loves them. That is the puppies. Everyone loves the puppies, but they have zero impact on sales. So we really need to optimize for the what and the how for all those four areas of associative attention to drive the sales. And Sam, you've got a really good metaphor on this that you've mentioned to me before.
Yes. Yeah, so we've got a nice little Venn diagram, which has on one side how and the other side what. And within that diagram, I basically see that as a recipe, essentially. So if you're making a cake, if you don't have the right recipe, but you have good ingredients, it's not going to end up doing what it should. And if you've got, you know, a good recipe, but then you've got bad quality ingredients and so on and so forth, however you mix that up, it's never going to be right. So you need both to be correct. You need a good recipe and you need good ingredients. And then you put the two together and that's how you get a good outcome. You can't just do these things in isolation. You can't just take all your clothes off and run down the street naked, holding up a brand sign and saying, here we go, we've got attention, I've got arrested. And then you know, you get let out and then, oh, actually it didn't make any difference. We didn't sell anything. It didn't move the dial at all. So, you know, if you want to grow a brand, attention is important, but the attention on its own is not the goal. That's not the point of doing it. You need to have some relevancy. It needs to be appropriate attention. It needs to have context, which is why we call it associative attention. So you need to consider what to build the attention for, which is, you know, all that information about CEPs, consumer insight. It really doesn't matter. I don't care how you do it internally. It's about the principles of it. Understand the what first, then you can move into how do you get that attention. So one follows the other. You can't do them in isolation. They have to be done together. And as Max said, you know, it's not one or the other. We do need to focus on both. And we can't stress that point enough.
A question about B2B. Do these kind of principles apply in the B2B space as well, or is it something that's different?
Absolutely. It definitely applies in B2B. Being someone who works in smaller businesses, a lot of the work I do is, you know, service-based businesses. It is B2B. And it's the same thing. And I think really it's just a symptom of, again, business, which is people like to silo things. They like to categorize things to a fault. You know, so people say, oh, well, B2B is different. Well, yes, there may be some differences in terms of the behaviors of buyers. And yes, the service or product is different. But ultimately, the principles do still apply. You still need to get attention. You still need to do it in the right way. All of these things, they still matter absolutely in a B2B context.
Great stuff. So which brands are activating attention in this way? Can you give me an example?
For me, I think McDonald's are a great example. They regularly, I would say, churn out advertising that focuses on building associative attention. Their ads tend to be clearly branded, have clear category entry points at the center of the like creative story, the narrative in the ad. And I would say they also tend to do really well in getting attention. I think it was last week or just a few days ago, I actually saw a McDonald's ad from France. It was about their delivery app. And I would argue that this ad really ticked all these sort of like associative attention boxes. So McDonald's for me is really great example to look at and learn from.
And what about, are there any examples from some newer brands?
Yes. So Liquid Death is one that people see a lot in the trade press. I think they're a brilliant example of a brand that really understands the importance of, you know, being super distinctive and getting attention in a way that is consistent and just works. You know, they're not just doing stunts. There is a lot of consistency in what they do. Now, whether or not they've done a really good job with CEPs and all of that stuff is another question. But my inkling is, I don't have any data on this, my inkling is that they do, because, you know, they are doing well commercially as well. But also there are some smaller brands that I know locally that are doing a really good job with this. So one of those examples is Naked Marshmallow. They're based in Lincolnshire. Originally, they sold their products online only, I believe, but they eventually moved into physical distribution as well. So they clearly understand how people buy these products. They have distribution in shops, and they're relevant shops too. They're selling them in the co-op because it's more of a luxury item. It's more of a treat. And they also have two physical locations now in very high footfall areas. And that to me is a really good example of how just because you're small doesn't mean you can't do these things. It absolutely can be done. It's about understanding, you know, again, category wide, why are people buying in the first place? What's the reasoning behind that? Then understanding why they buy from you, and then using that information to then make those wider decisions about what you do in your marketing, whether it's comms, whether it's distribution, whether it's anything else. All of that stuff still ties into attention. You know, if your shop is in an alleyway, you're not going to get any attention. No one's going to notice you, which is why Max said, you know, point of sale does tie into this. If you're in the right place, you will get the sales.
We covered a lot there. Just to recap, associative attention is a concept that combines category entry points, distinctive brand assets, creative excellence, and media mastery. And brand owners, they need to focus on all four of these areas rather than in silos to get them right to achieve excellent execution. I think it'd be useful and helpful to break this down a bit for those listeners who are not so familiar with the terminology. So let's start with just explaining what are distinctive brand assets?
Distinctive brand assets, or we also call them DBAs, short, they're basically mental associations that help us, and when I say us, I mean us as consumers, to quickly and easily identify a brand. Again, be this in advertising, in store, online, high street, or narrow alleyway, as Sam just mentioned. So for example, if you're driving down the motorway, let's say the M25, and you see golden arches, you instantly know that this is McDonald's. You don't need to see the full name written out. Or if you walk on a high street and you see a green sign with something that looks a little bit like a mermaid, you know it's Starbucks. Or you are scrolling for home insurance on a comparison website, and you see a colored umbrella, you know it is Legal and General. And these are, as I said, what we call distinctive brand assets, DBAs. And without them, it is very difficult to identify a brand. So think about it this way. A brand that you've been buying for many years, all of a sudden changes the packaging. You go to store, you look for the packaging that you know, meaning the packaging that you have associations for in your mind, but you don't see it because the packaging has changed. So what are the odds now of you spending potentially a lot of time to find that brand? It requires effort and isn't quick and easy. Or are you more likely to just buy another brand that you quickly and easily recognize and that hasn't changed packaging? So hopefully this example makes it clear why distinctive brand assets are so important.
And that's why it's really important to understand what your distinctive brand assets are. And from my experience working with smaller businesses, they don't know what those are. And to be fair, I wouldn't expect them to, because again, a lot of the discourse around things like DBAs are aimed at larger businesses. That's the reference point, which is, again, a bit of a bugbear of mine. But smaller brands have DBAs as well. Any brand that's successful, in my opinion, that has been going for 30 years, that has a logo that it's kept for a long time, that's a DBA. That's something that they own. That's something that they need to work with, and not replace, but work with and develop that over time. And the only way you can do that is by carrying out that research to understand from those consumers of yours and your buyers, you know, are you recognizable? You know, and again, Jenny Romanewick from Ehrenberg Bass Institute has done a lot of work into this. And she suggests identifying those via quantitative research, which again, if you're a small brand, you can do it with qual and then turn it into quant. You can be smart with that. But again, we do need to be conscious of the fact that, you know, as a smaller brand, you know, you won't have the resources that big brands have, which is why I like to say it's about principles. It's not about doing it perfectly. It's not about looking at big brands and trying to copy them. It's just about recognizing the principles that they've done And then making sure that you are, you know, market oriented and that you do see the world through the eyes of the customer. You know, it's not about your opinion as a marketer. It's about what the market is telling you. And then it's your job to respond to that.
Great. And yeah, we have tons of research about and a best practice around DBAs, distinctive brand assets on Walk. You know, it's, we didn't talk about it here, but it can also include a particular sound can be part of your DBA toolkit, or it could be, as we've spoken about, colors and shapes, etc. So yeah, really great stuff. Now, so we've covered DBAs. What about CEPs? Who wants to dive into the category entry points?
Well, CEPs, one of those acronyms that we have plenty of them in marketing. It's basically short for category entry points. And I would say this really is like the technical term for what, if I simplify it, you can think of as sort of like the reasons or the triggers why someone, your consumers, your customers are buying from a category. Let me give you an example. Let's say I'm tired, but I have an important meeting to go to in London in the afternoon. So I pick up a Red Bull from the local Sainsbury's that is on my way to the Acton Town tube station. So CEPs are basically the associations that make your brand or product, service, whatever you have, relevant to your customers. Like Red Bull is relevant for me as an on-the-go energy boost. And these are like reasons, triggers, are the ones that we need to communicate clearly in our advertising and where applicable also at the point of sale and our packaging. Because quite simply, if you don't make it clear what your product or service is for, how will your target audience know? And at times I would say that brands communicate messages that are not very relevant for consumers, or not at all, or don't have a clear message at all. For example, and I like to talk about this one because it still makes me smile, even though it's a few years old. I was sitting on the tube in London and saw an ad for a brand. And the brand was called N26. And despite looking at the ad for several minutes, reading all the copy, I mean, I went even as far as reading the small print several times. I really couldn't figure out what the brand was for. Actually, I only realized that the brand name was N26 after I Googled it and I found out that it was a digital bank. But I would argue that probably 99.9% of people who see the ad will probably not spend as much time as I did and even Google the brand. I, of course, only did it because I work in the industry and I'm always on the lookout for examples. So we really must make it clear to our consumers when to think of our brands. And together with distinctive brand assets that we've just discussed, CEPs really are the building blocks for mental availability, what you need to build associations for. So what's really important here is to look at CEPs through the eyes of the consumer, similar to the point that Sam has just made about distinctive brand assets. They should be based on what is important to consumers, not where we as marketers see white space typically on a, like at a perceptual map to make our brand different from competitors. Focus on what is important to consumers, why they are buying from the category. Find out what those reasons are, these triggers, and then communicate them in your advertising and across touch points, whatever touch points you're using. Because my provocation here really is that this white space that you may want to occupy, typically to be seen as different from competitors, that this white space may not be much, if of any relevance to your consumers. So once again, look at this through the eyes of your consumers to really identify what is important to them. Then decide on which CEPs to focus on. Then communicate them clearly and consistently across whatever touch points you're using. And when I speak to marketers about this, it typically brings up the question of like, oh, hey, Max, how many category entry points, how many triggers and so on shall I communicate? Well, the simplified answer is as many as possible, because studies, research has shown that bigger brands are connected to more CEPs in the minds of consumers. So if you want to grow your brand, you will likely need to associate it with more CEPs over time. And again, if I come back to McDonald's, they are a really good example because over time they expanded the category entry points that they communicate, adding breakfast, coffee, salads, and so on to the offering and communicating them. Because if I think back when I was a teenager in Austria and McDonald's was the big thing, the new thing, they weren't really known for any of those things. Hence, when we wanted a coffee or breakfast, we didn't consider them.
Okay, so that makes sense to connect my brand to as many CEPs as possible to increase relevance for customers. However, how does this apply for a small brand? How would they go about it? And, you know, obviously they'll have a smaller budget. How do I know what CEPs to focus on?
I think the key thing for smaller brands is to just accept that you have to make choices because you won't be able to do what bigger brands do. You have limited budget, you have limited time and limited efforts and energy, to be honest. So you really need to be choiceful. So I would say it really does depend on the context. So for example, the number of CEPs in the category, their importance for the consumers, how the CEPs are linked to competitors as well, and how those competitors are communicating them. So that's something that any business can do. They can look at other businesses that are in their local area or their competition, and they can assess their CEPs. You know, are they reaching them? Are they on the mark? And if they're not, there's an opportunity there for you to get an edge over that smaller competitor, because you're not going to be able to compete with McDonald's. That's not where you play. You play relatively. You play with your relative competition. So just having an understanding of CEPs, to be honest, is going to put a small brand above a lot of other smaller brands. Just having the knowledge is good enough. And in time, as you grow, you can then start to make an impact on those. So initially, you might just be able to say, well, these are the CEPs. Let's feed that into our comms. Let's feed the messaging here into our social media posts, into our newsletters, and just get an understanding of how we should actually work on our CEPs. And then just, you know, again, being consistent and just doing this stuff over time, not jumping from TikTok to, you know, Snapchat to whatever, the latest fad. Move away from that stuff and just focus on getting these fundamental basics right. They're boring, but they are the things that make the difference at the end of the day.
It feels like you have to have a certain amount of confidence to stick with that approach.
Yes, I think that is largely the issue. I think a lot of marketing practice in large and small is to do with lack of confidence. I think if people don't feel like they have an understanding of the market and of consumers and of their competition, then there's an anxiety there that causes people to flip and jump from what everyone else is doing or what looks new and exciting. And it's not based in any rationale other than, well, that's what they're doing. It's almost like you're trying to fit in with what your peers are doing as opposed to responding to the market itself, which again is something I'm really big on, which is stop thinking about what everyone else is doing and just try and get an understanding of who your customers are as people, which sounds wishy-washy, but it's not. It's just understanding who buys from you, who they are as people, so you can choose the right media, you know, price things right. All of these things are connected, but you have to start there. You've got to focus on customers, and CEPs is a core part of that.
Okay, all right. So you've got your distinctive brand assets clear on that, and then you've kind of got a sense of your CEPs and a strategy around that. What's next?
I would say next up, we need to think about our sort of like creative excellence, our advertising that we are creating. And as I mentioned earlier, when we say creative excellence, we don't just mean advertising, but we also mean a point of sale, physical product packaging, if you have one, things like that. And knowing what distinctive brand assets and category entry points you want to focus on simply isn't enough. Because why? We need to communicate them. Because without communicating them, we can't build those important associations in the minds of our target audience. And this is typically, but not exclusively, done via advertising. And in advertising, we need to think about several aspects. For example, and I would say first and foremost, that we live in this world of information overload, that our consumers are exposed to more content than ever before. So the first thing our advertising really needs to do is to get attention. Because without attention, we can't build associations. But And this is exactly what the associative attention concept is about. We need to focus the attention on what matters, the DBAs and the CEPs that we've discussed a moment ago. So in your advertising, it needs to be crystal clear what brand is communicating and when to think of your brand. But this means also more than just sticking the logo on your ad. It's about embedding your, for example, distinctive brand assets creatively in your advertising, ideally in a way that they become part of the story, rather than what Sam and I often call like the corner of doom. And when I speak about the corner of doom, it really reminds me of a client meeting I had a few years ago, where in the meeting I mentioned the importance of using distinctive brand assets across all their advertising. And then one delegate in the meeting said, "Oh, great, Max, that's really great news. We're already doing this. We already have our logo at the bottom right of all our ads." Well, that is the corner of doom. And what we're doing here as marketers is we're making the assumption that our consumers spend time looking at our ads, that they look at the logo. But they don't. So we need to prominently and creatively incorporate the distinctive brand assets in our advertising. And what we did to really show the client the power of this, we took a competitor ad, yeah, so one that consumers clearly identified with a competitor, and we put the client's distinctive brand asset very prominently and creatively in the ad. And guess what? Guess what happened? People now thought that the ad belonged to the client brand. So sticking your logo on the ad is not enough. You really need to make the DBA, the distinctive brand assets, central to your story in your creative, in your advertising. And the same is basically true when we think about category entry points. We need to make them prominent and clear in our advertising. I would say that Apple do a really good job on that. Rather than talking about functions and features, they bring those to life in a very creative way. And this really is the role of the creative, to draw attention to the associations you want to build. Because you as a brand owner, you knowing the associations you want to focus on is not enough. It's not about you. We need to get those associations in the minds of your audience. And this is why creative excellence is so important.
You always, as a smaller brand, you always have a huge disadvantage because you're small. That is the biggest problem, being a small brand. So CEPs, distinctive brand assets, these are all things that legacy businesses have. These are all things that big brands understand, and they all have them, whether knowingly or not, they've got them. So when you're a small brand, the question is always, well, how do I get a distinctive brand asset? Is it a logo? So the corner of doom is a great example, and I've seen this in personal experience. People think that, oh, it's an ad, so it needs to have the logo in the bottom, but the ad itself is absolutely rubbish. It's like, well, no, it's not a tick box exercise. It's about understanding buyers. So why they buy from you, why they buy from the broader category with CEPs. You know, you don't have to call them CEPs. It's just, again, about using the principles of that. If you understand those things, you can then start to position a product or a business or a brand, a new brand, in a way that meets the needs and wants of a customer with the aspiration and vision of that business. That's really where you're hoping to get to. You're trying to make the customer expectation match the you know, reality of the brand. So meeting somewhere in the middle and saying, oh, you know, when I buy something or I see something and it meets that expectation, that's a good trade. There's nothing worse than a new business that starts up, it has all these promises, and then it doesn't meet the promise. People won't buy from it. So, you know, they might have, for example, they might do like a big launch stunt that's really expensive and it gets loads of attention locally, and they say like 100% of our sales are delivered on time every time. That's what we care about. And then within a few weeks, they're overloaded with sales because of this launch. And actually they don't meet those, you know, that promise they've made to their customers, you know, and that kind of thing is common, and that happens. And that puts people off buying from a brand. So it's really important to understand that, you know, if you're going to do stuff, you've got to match it with the reality of a consumer. You can't wish things into existence. That whole phrase of, you know, build it and they will come is just not true. That's not how it works if you're small. You have to understand people and then build something that they want or need, and then they might come. And again, it's like Jean-Luc Picard says, he says, you know, you can do everything right and still fail, and that's life. And that is the reality for smaller brands. But by doing all of these things and reading through the article that me and Max have done, at least you have a chance to do things right and do things in a way that improves the odds of success. And it will at least give you the ability to write briefs and you know, job descriptions for people that really reflect what your brand is actually trying to do and try and do it properly. And Max gave me the quote yesterday, which is that Ogilvy said, you know, give me the freedom of a tight brief. And that's so important. And I've done creative, I've been agency side, you know, and moving into marketing, I've always found that to be such a big challenge. You know, you can't get good work out of people. You can't get good attention making work or attention grabbing work if you don't have a good understanding of who your customers are. You need that. You need those CPs. You need those DBAs. You need everything. You need those ingredients. Then you can hand them over to the creatives who could then make an amazing cake that one, gets attention, and two, does what it's supposed to do, whether that's sales, whether that's, you know, profitability. That's the point. And that's why we're doing this.
Great stuff. Well, look, I think that's a really nice place to wrap up. But before we do that, because there is tons of really useful information in your piece, which obviously we can't cover all on this podcast, but is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with? Max, do you want to kick off before we close?
My main advice is that if you want to improve your brand executions, don't think about attention in isolation. Think about associative attention. Think about the what and the how to really connect the dots between how people recognize you, what makes your brand relevant, how you develop your advertising, and what media you use. You need to do all these four things well versus one really well and the rest are badly. And again, think back to Sam's cake metaphor from early on. You sort of like get one ingredient wrong and the cake won't be good. And in case you're wondering how well your brand is doing on associative attention and maybe how you can have a look into that, we've developed a associative attention health check, which you can find on our Trinity website, which you are free to use. It's on trinitymarketing.com. That is Trinity with triple I's and no Y's. Or if it's easier, just reach out to Sam or I via LinkedIn.
And Sam, closing thoughts from you?
Yeah, again, for me, it's about not necessarily reading this article from the point of view of I can't do these things. Again, it's principles. The processes that you use internally will always look different. And that's one thing I always say to people is to read things from the point of view of principles. So you do need to go through this stuff, but there isn't necessarily like a perfect process that you need to follow. So don't feel anxious or nervous that you can't implement what we've shared. You know, what you can do is work with your teams, work with the people you know, and say, right, this article, it's a practical guide. It gives us some principles as to how we can do this better. And then you can work with your team to develop whatever process internally are needed to get there.
I'm right in thinking you've got a workshop coming up quite soon in London. Is that correct?
Yes, Sam and I are running a workshop. It's a one-day face-to-face workshop in London. It's very soon. It's on the 21st of March. And the topic is on how brands grow and compete. And it would be really great to see some of our podcast listeners there. In the workshop, we look at aspects of associative attention. We cover attention through the lens of brain science. We talk about distinctive brand assets. Sam and I really hope to see you on the 21st of March in London. Please do reach out to Sam or I to get your ticket, or we'll see if we can also put a link for the workshop below the podcast. But if not, just reach out to Sam or I on LinkedIn.
Thank you, Max, and thank you, Sam, for sharing your time and expertise with us today. If you want to know more, Walk subscribers can access the paper on walk.com. If you like what you've heard today, you can access more Walk podcasts on your favourite podcasting platform. Thank you for listening.